9 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also brought to you by the locally owned Mama Celeste Stone Baked Pizzeria, serving 30 signature thin crust and deep dish Chicago-style stone baked pizzas, calzone, hand-tossed salads, homemade meatballs, wings, and vegan options. Oh, yeah. Mama Celeste is located in the Safeway Plaza on Nord, open every day at 4 p.m. and noon on Sunday. That's Mama Celeste Stone Baked Pizzeria. Phone number 345-1510. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. All right. Well, welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. As we head into the long Memorial Day weekend and the gentle heat of summer has arrived here in Chico, it's time for many of us to hit the road for the most American of pastimes, road trips and burning fossil fuel. If any of our listeners, like myself, have taken I-5 either north towards Redding or south to Southern California, you have probably seen a semi-truck rig hauling cows, or seen the turnoff to the Red Bluff auction yard, or you've seen and smelled Harris Ranch, the enormous feedlot down south off of I-5. That is our sad destination today. Over to you, Jeannie.
I thought we would take a road trip today, but from the cow's perspective. So let's start from the beginning with an overview of the beef cattle industry. Hang on to your horses here. There are around 94 million cattle currently living in the United States. Ranchers know this number as the national inventory. Annually, around 34 million of these cows, about one-third of them, will be slaughtered for consumption. 30% of those cows are actually cows and babies from the dairy industry, not quote, beef cattle at all. And these are just so-called spent dairy cows and the male calves who are either raised as veal or fattened up and sold as less than high-quality beef animals. And the whole sorry business, we're going to get a big-picture view of it, is divided up into a few stages, and we see some of those stages here. Right here, this is Butte County, and north is big cattle country because we have lots of open space. So most calves are born on what are called cow-calf operations. These are small to mid-sized farms with a core herd of breeding cows. And unlike on dairy farms, these calves get to remain with their moms for about a year, depending on the type of operation and what the rancher wants to run. A lot of these animals we see in our area in the spring are from cow-calf operations. These are small. What we sentimentally know as family farms, they generally do not provide the whole revenue that a household needs. So they're kind of a part-time thing because we're not talking about a whole lot of cows on any piece of acreage that's around here. Beef cows are born with basically the healthiest bodies of any farmed animal, I found out. This is because we've not been able to engineer cows to grow very fast. They grow comparatively slowly, and so they are spared the breeding that creates these horrible, crippling growth-related diseases that chickens, turkeys, and pigs get, and they're also spared that horrible calf separation when dairy cows are separated from their annual calf and plugged right into the milk industry. And of course, the reason why these baby calves get to stay with their moms is because federal subsidies make it economically attractive for large numbers of cows to freely graze. Mm. We've talked about this many times before. The beef industry is a little different from other industries because a whole segment of this animal's life, its youngest age, is subsidized with cheap grazing. These grazing fees, mostly from the BLM and the Forest Service, as we've talked about, are the only reason why the cattle industry is still viable compared to the chicken and pig industries.
I thought conservatives and farmers didn't believe in government handouts.
Yeah, right. Only if it's integral to paying the mortgage and
right.
Getting their kids through college.
All right, so on these cow-calf operations, the sensitive young calves undergo several mutilations without the benefit of pain relief. Branding. Animals can be hot iron or freeze branded. The branding involves the permanent disfigurement of the calf, leaving damaged scar tissue for identification purposes. So that's terrible. Castration. If the calf is male, he will be castrated without any pain relief. Think of all you parents who, you know, struggle over circumcision. And this is a far cry from that. Some farms use large industrial rubber bands to cut off the blood supply. It can take weeks for the testicles to fall off, and infections are, unfortunately, of course, common.
Right. We talked about this when we talked about the sheep issue, right? Same techniques.
Cheap. Other farms use an implement that crushes the spermatic cord. Painful to read, a very painful method of castration.
Yeah, I'm sure all the guys in our audience are like feeling a certain searing pain.
Still, others will kind of slice open the testicles and forcibly rip them out. Again, all this is done without anesthesia or analgesics because it's more profitable, even though, as we just noted, they're getting free grazing in most of the time.
Yeah, and some of it's because there's no will, because we talked about the lidocaine being required to be administered by a veterinarian, and no will in the industry to change that pattern.
Another mutilation is dehorning. Cattle who are not naturally polled, quote, born without horns, are often dehorned without the benefit of pain medicine. Horns may be gouged out of the head, chemically removed, or sawed off. These mutilations are considered normal, necessary, and natural, but, I mean, if you're listening, they are obviously anything but. The calves are sold at weaning, typically at 8 or 9 months old, according to the California Cattlemen's Association's website, and now the second stage of a beef cow's life begins. The young weaned calves are rounded up with dogs and electric prods and are transported to an auction yard, or sometimes directly to another ranch that the breeder has contracted with. By their very nature, auction yards are, you know, vectors of disease and misery, right? This is where everyone is being sent, the death camp's beginning, as it were. Unknown animals are forced to mingle with one another, and then they are all paraded into the same pit. Between the auction groups, the pit may or may not be cleaned, but in most cases, the young animals are exposed to unknown diseases anyway. Animals may be electrically prodded, kicked, hit, poked, and slapped to get them to move in and out of the auction ring. Sometimes these auctions are now conducted via video.
Yeah, so anytime you have to get one of these animals to move, you have to kind of force it to move or create a situation that it'll move into naturally.
Right.
And, you know, I've watched a lot of videos prepping for this show, and I saw a lot of cattle prods. I didn't see them used a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, like, touching the animal, but the animals were aware that they were there. So
right.
It's very similar to what we see with elephant training and the use of the bull hook, where you may not see the hook actually injuring the animal at the time, but that animal is sure afraid of it.
Right. I mean, it's not the first time they've been harmed in this way, so they know what it is. There's an auction yard in Orland, the Orland Auction Commission Yard over on Old Highway 99, which is open year-round. And they auction off sheep, pigs, goats, and cows every week. And, of course, there's the Shasta Auction Yard, up in Red Bluff, which I'm sure you've all seen or driven by. It's a huge operation. Shasta Livestock Auction is the largest auction market west of the Rockies, with approximately 100,000 live cattle going through the ring each year, and a similar number in offsite deals. Shasta also represents close to 250,000 cattle annually via its Western Video Market satellite and internet video auctions.
Yep, they've gone high tech. I was just stunned to learn about these volumes of numbers. So it's no wonder we can hardly drive up and down I-5 without seeing
constantly moving. That's a massive volume, and it's just it sounds like a terrible horror movie with masked men watching, you know, animals being prodded around over video in a black room. Most of these transactions are based on weight. With every gain in weight, a cow is worth a little bit more money. And I think Jeannie kind of gets into the weight a little bit more.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio here on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. So to recap, we're talking about the cattle industry and how beef gets to the table. Cows destined for the beef industry are typically born on pasture and live with their moms relatively decent lives until the rancher decides that it's time for the calf to be weaned and the mother cow to be rebred for the next year cycles cycle of calves. So, as in the dairy industry, these mom cows suffer separation loss year after year. The calves are rounded up, castrated, dehorned, or otherwise mutilated, and then sold to a middleman type of rancher, and where these calves may now spend anywhere from 2 to 10 months at these middleman operations. They're called stocker, S-T-O-C-K-E-R, stocker operations, and they put yearling cattle out onto rough rangeland or other grazing situations, being fed hay or something like that. Generally, the cattle are purchased following weaning in the fall and wintered on low-quality feed or forage until the new spring grass comes in that can support the animal's nutritional requirements for growth. Then, after that time period has gone by and the rancher decides to take his profit in, those animals are then loaded up into a livestock hauler and taken to feedlots. And at this point, that's when you can get bigger groups of animals. When the animals are younger, they're moved in smaller trucks, because it's a small business operation. Mm-hmm. These are family operations. So then they're using these low-slung cattle trailers that are typically hauled by a pickup truck. But then once you get to the larger numbers of animals and heavier animals, that's when you start seeing the big rigs being implemented. And, you know, all this is on YouTube. This is an industry that's very proud of what it does. And so I think it pays to step back and look at the big picture like we're doing here. So the California Cattlemen's Association website was very interesting. They reported that California has more than 100 million acres of land, so the whole state of California, 38 million acres of which are range and pasture lands. Of those 38 million acres that are suitable for grazing and not so much heavy produce production or orchards, approximately half of those are owned by the federal government, which makes many California ranchers heavily dependent on the availability of federal grazing permits. So if the feds try to trim or change the management of these public lands in any way, it directly affects the impact of these small ranchers, and they fight back. So the takeaway for me is that these 38 million acres out of about 100 million acres means that 38% of California's land service is subordinate to cows. It's for crazy. Cattle grazing, right?
And if you know, kind of extrapolate that, when we say, you know, meat can't feed the world in the long term, you know, you can't have 50% of the world's arable land be given over to cattle production.
Yeah, you know? No, and you know, there's actually a quote on the cattlemen's website where it says, let's see here, I will look for it and get back to it. So then we move on to the business of the feedlot, right? The business of a feedlot is to trade health for size. You have these relatively healthy animals that have been relatively unimpeded, right? Mm-hmm. Aside from the mutilation of castration, dehorning, and these things.
I mean, it gets worse, yes.
a feedlot is a dry enclosure, or when it rains, it turns into mud. The animals no longer are grazing on pastures. When these animals arrive, they're vaccinated and given a mix of growth promotants to stimulate muscle and fat growth, because that is where the money is. The animals will spend anywhere from 3 to 12 months at a feedlot, where they will gain an enormous amount of weight in a short period of time. Thousands of unknown animals are once again mixed together, disrupting their own natural herd structures, and again exposing animals to diseases. One of the biggest fears in any of these intensive animal agriculture industries is some kind of disease wiping through us, right, sweeping through their herds or their barns. At these feedlots, managers look at the population as a whole, each reviewing a lot of numbers and data and observing individual cows' eating habits and glancing at their health history, but sometimes one individual will be responsible for over 40,000 animals. So they're just doing the speed read version of these animals. So anyway, so that is what a feedlot is. And here's my factoid. For those of you who swear by so-called grass-fed beef, the California Cattlemen's Association website states quite clearly that, quote, cows fed solely roughage, which by which they mean grass or hay, take longer to reach market weight and market condition, and land resources in the United States are insufficient for a forage-based beef supply at the current level of consumer demand. That is coming from the California Cattlemen's Association. So,
but I mean, it makes people feel better if they eat grass-fed beef.
Yes, it does. It doesn't make the cow feel any better, though. And that longer lifespan that it takes for a grass-fed animal to come to market weight, that's more methane or greenhouse gases that are being being produced.
All right. Moving south along I-5 in Coalinga, about 4.5 hours south of Chico, depending on how fast you drive.
Yeah, well.
The Harris Cattle Ranch sprawls just east of the freeway. And you can smell it from miles away. You know what I'm talking about. And it's always full of cows at all times of the year. This is a feedlot. It is California's largest beef producer and the largest ranch on the west coast of the United States.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I'm not surprised based on the smell. At over 800 acres and housing over 100,000 cattle at one time, with 100 slaughtered daily, Harris Ranch is the largest feedlot on the West Coast, as well as in the United States. Jeannie described kind of the small operators who might be some of the more local cattle ranchers up here, the cow-calf breeders, the stockers and middlemen who graze their animals on private or our public land, and then the auction yards, which then peddle this non-human flesh, and it kind of ends up then often at Harris Ranch, where cows follow the same pattern but in a different way. It's a vertically integrated operation, so it still has all those stages, but it owns its own fleet of trucks that transport cattle from the several ranches with which it deals. It also runs its own feedlot, slaughterhouse, processing, and packaging facilities, because as we said, it's 100,000 cattle roughly around there. So, you know, in short, owning a cattle feedlot means you're in the business of growing weaned calves who are, you know, 450 to 600 pounds, and yearling steers or heifers, about 500 to 800 pounds. You're taking them for a period of time and growing them to their slaughter weights of 1,100 or 1,400 pounds. So the primary goal of that business is to make money by efficient growth and weight gain. Increasing the size of the feedlot reduces feeding costs in the final stages there, and with that cost reduction, there is more profit. As was already noted, you know, these animals are getting pumped full of hormones, and I can't imagine what it feels like to grow that fast. And I assume probably if they weren't slaughtered, there's no way to continue doing that to them anyway. They'd all die or have cancer or just collapse.
There are definite, the way they're fed, there are definite health consequences for the animals.
Which sadly they don't get to, but it's still, it's kind of in a sense, force feeding. So feedlots with more than 1,000 animals make up less than 5% of the total number of feedlots, yet they send about 80 to 90% of the total number of cattle to the slaughterhouse. And, you know, again, it's California cows are not happy cows. This is not a family farm situation.
Exactly. So at its core, according to Eric Marcus in his excellent book, Meat Market, the business of feedlots is to trade health for size. I stole that from him. Beef producers suffer a serious competitive disadvantage compared to other animal exploiters. Pigs and chickens, as we mentioned, grow much, much faster than cows do. They've been bred to. To get past this, quote, handicap, the beef industry had to invent feedlots. Feedlots serve as a brute force method of overcoming natural genetics that they've not been able to breed out yet. During their stay at a feedlot, the animal gains, a cow will gain almost 100 pounds every month. And as we mentioned, nearly all feedlot cattle in the United States receive hormone implants, which speed growth and increase muscle mass. According to Eric Marcus, each dollar spent on implants delivers about $15 in added profits. And that said, the main engine for fattening cattle is not these hormones, but corn. Corn is far richer than grass in calories, so they gain hundreds of extra pounds when switched to corn rations in the feedlot.
So am I to assume then we're growing corn in the Midwest, shipping it to the West, feed cattle, and shipping cattle back to the Midwest in some situations?
Some of that goes on. Some of the fodder for the animals is actually grown right there, because the manure has to go somewhere, and they will treat the manure and then use it and spray it onto acreage nearby and use that to grow corn. Some of the corn that we see growing in our own area is not table corn, but is feed corn.
Right. I have seen feed corn growing in the valley. It's got the big kernels and...
And really closely spaced rows, right?
Right.
If they have rows at all, yeah. Anyway, so cows did not evolve to eat corn, which may be news. Corn-based feed actually damages the cow's livers and causes them other health problems. The Merck Veterinary Manual even says liver abscesses are seen in all ages and breeds of cattle wherever cattle are raised. They're most common in feedlot and dairy cattle fed rations that predispose them to ruminitis. Cattle with liver abscesses have reduced production efficiency. But I'm sure that I'm sure that cows with liver abscesses don't feel very good either. Corn-based feed also drives the digestive system of the cow into what's called acidosis, which allows harmful bacteria to overpopulate in their gut. And this is why the feed in these feedlots is very carefully milled and manufactured on site, and it will often contain antibiotics or these things called ionophores, which are a class of medication that I didn't even know existed. There's no parallel for it in the human pharmacy. The growth promotants that there are used, according to the Drover's website for the cattle industry, are a hormone pellet under the skin in the animal's ear that enhances the existing reproductive hormones that occur naturally in the animal. And in steers, the implants replace some of the hormones that were removed when the animal was castrated back when he was little.
I wonder how many of these pellets make it into the supply of ground beef.
That is a good question. Yeah. It's implanted in the skin around the ear, so I'd assume that it comes out when the animal is...
I'm sure they try.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. another type of growth promotant are called beta agonists, which are substances that bind to a receptor on a muscle, and they sort of act like adrenaline. So adrenaline diverts blood flow from the organs, particularly the digestive organs in a person, and they drive it towards the muscle, and it's invoked in the fight or flight response. Similarly, beta agonists redirect nutrients so that more growth occurs in muscle rather than internal organs. And interestingly, albuterol, which is a human asthma medication, is an example of a beta agonist. So instead, they're feeding this stuff to these cows so that growth is directed to their muscles, which is where the money is. Another growth promotant is these things called ionophores, which are actually antimicrobial substances that are delivered through the feed, and they affect directly the microbes, the bacteria in the animal's gut, in these ruminant guts, which do most of the work of digesting cellulose and things for the cow, and they let the animal consume more calories and stay and let their gut be a little more effective while eating corn. So those are what your beef cow get.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's the levels of sort of cruelty and unnatural acts sort of pile upon each other, you know, until it's hard to kind of distinguish what's going on. But, you know, when you break it down like that, from the mutilation to the forced gathering and confinement and shipping around and auctioning off and force feeding, basically, and modifying with hormones and slaughtering. I mean, it's like a bad movie. And that's, you know, that's what you're seeing when you drive by Harris Ranch or any other auction yard. You're seeing, you know, up to 100,000 animals in any weather eating food they're not evolved to eat and being medicated and drugged to make that cheap government-subsidized food even more profitable. At the end of the day, Harris Ranch supplies the hamburger for the In-N-Out burger chain, even though people tend to think that they're somehow better than other burger chains, and also distributes beef and prepared meals through Costco, Albertsons, Safeway, and restaurants nationwide. So Don't look away when you pass these things. Don't hold your nose. Be aware and act in any way you can on it.
Yeah, and a good way of acting is simply not to put that stuff on your plate and not to accept it when it's fed to your kids in school. So, anyway, that is a feedlot in a nutshell, and hopefully we all can be a little more aware when we drive up and down and in our area of how directly our economy is connected to this unconscionable process that we have found ourselves in. So, anyway, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio. We're about to wrap up here on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio.
All right, now it is time for your Chico Animal Rights calendar of events. Get ready to mark your calendars, iPhones and Androids, and pieces of paper, back of your hand, however you keep track.
You know, I want to keep, just the next 4 days are fabulous. So tomorrow, Thursday, May 25th, Plant-Based Chico is rescreening the end of What the Health, which was a great movie about eating a whole foods plant-based diet and making yourself healthier. That'll be 6 to 9 p.m. at the Chico Grange Hall tomorrow, Thursday, May 25th, and that's Plant-Based Chico. Then Friday, May 26th, the Chico Arts Center is hosting a fundraiser called Taiwan On. It's a vegan Asian fusion, vegan Asian fusion dinner that is, sounds like it's going to be amazing. We have vegan Thai iced tea, Thai rice paper spring rolls with various dipping sauces, Thai basil fried rice, peanut veggie bowl with tofu, and three types of vegan desserts.
Wow.
So that sounds like it'll be amazing.
A great time.
Yeah, we'll be had by all. So that's at the Chico Art Center from 6 to 8 p.m. You can get your tickets in advance by stopping in at the Chico Art Center, which is at Orange and 5th Street at the train station, or you can buy it at the door. You can check out the Chico Art Center website at chicoartcenter.org for more information. And then on Saturday, May 27th, you have the Chico Vegan Potluck from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Chico Library Community Room at 1108 Sherman Avenue. And that is, we have no theme this month.
The theme is vegan food.
The theme is vegan food, chaotic vegan food. We have Nancy Matthews will be there with Plant-Based Chico, coordinating a whole food, plant-based, no salt, no oil, no sugar table for those who are going to maintain a healthy weekend. So there's that. And then on Sunday, May 28th, we have Volunteer Workday at Peace of Peace Animal Sanctuary up in Penn Valley, California. They have a volunteer work day. They're asking that you check out their Facebook page and RSVP to their Facebook event so they can plan the projects that they want to work on. They have llamas, pigs, goats, and chickens, and just a really good attitude. And they've had a hard winter, so they need the help. So please check them out. Peace of Peace Animal Sanctuary. That's P-I-E-C-E of Peace, P-E-A-C-E, Animal Sanctuary. And then we have some other stuff coming up at the end of the month, but let's cut to the end here. We have one last bit of business to take care of. The animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
The animal rights quote of the week is from the Elephant in the Room blog about Buddhism, veganism, and compassion. Non-vegan consumers endorse and support the selective breeding that shortens inconvenient preliminaries as far as is possible, or that flavors whichever physical attributes most suit our intended use. We are content to call it farming. It is a good, sound, socially acceptable word that we don't examine critically.
But that we should.
Only veganism recognizes the right of every individual to own their life and to live it as the gift of limitless potential that it should be, that it deserves to be. We have no right, no need, and no justification to deny this gift to any other individual. Realizing this and becoming vegan are one and the same thing. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you and you and you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for The Real Issue coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff.
Until next week, be different, be better. be kind.
And go vegan.